You're back listening to 3CR on Green Left Radio, and we are now happy to be joined by Jonathan Srirunganathan, who is a former Brisbane City Councillor for the Gabba Ward. He's also a musician, a writer and community worker and Greens candidate for Mayor of Brisbane at the recent council elections. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah. So I'm this is Jacob here, and I'm coming in with, I guess, the first kind of question, and because I think just to give listeners a bit of context, we're actually hoping to do a bit of a series of interviews with different people from political parties, and we'll probably do an interview with a Socialist Alliance representative and maybe others at this point, but we're starting off with Jonathan from the Greens. But we're wanting to sort of have a series of kind of discussions on the role of the Labor Party, and I guess the decline of the support from ordinary people for the kind of major parties. So it's kind of like, so the question really to kind of start off this discussion is, you know, it's been really, it's been 2 years since the federal election in 22, and there was actually a number of significant trends that occurred there. You know, the Greens, which you are part of, Jonathan, received a significantly increased vote, even just across the board. But of course, disproportionately, you got the best result in Queensland. But also, there's also then, since then, we've also had the Tasmanian state elections, which a Queensland, there's a Queensland academic that you might know, John Quiggins, who did a bit of a kind of analysis of that and sort of found that there's actually clearly a decline in support for the major parties, even reflected in that Tasmanian state election. And of course, there's also the Queensland council elections where that same observable trend has been kind of seen. So it's clear that major parties are losing support. And given that you're also a candidate and you're at the centre of this of a Greens campaign in the Queensland Council elections, where you ran as a candidate, I guess I want to hear some of your reflections on all these kind of different themes that I've just sort of raised in my question.
Yeah, so you're spot on that there's a gradual long term decline in support for the major parties, and we've seen that over multiple elections, multiple jurisdictions, multiple levels of government. What's, I guess, interesting is to drill down into the details of why that's happening and where that vote is going, because what we've seen from, particularly up in Brisbane, is that where we have a strong left-wing challenge, say, in the form of the Greens have been picking up votes, both Labor and Liberal voters who are disillusioned with the major party. But in electorates or elections where the Greens haven't run a strong campaign or haven't had a big on-the-ground presence, that vote has been just as likely to swing to Pauline Hanson or other far-right parties, or in some cases, independents. So what we're seeing, at least in Brisbane, in the Greens, is that the Greens actually have to work to win those votes. They're not just automatically flowing to the Greens by default. You actually have to do the work of reaching people and articulating a really clear alternative vision for society. And, yeah, we saw that in the most recent Brisbane City Council election. For people who don't know, the Brisbane City Council has 850,000 voters. So it's a huge electorate. It's like four times the size of a federal electorate. And we just saw a 5.3% swing to the Greens citywide. So that kind of confirmed that the 2022 federal election result in Brisbane wasn't sort of an anomaly. We won three federal seats for the Greens here in Brisbane, and a lot of people were like, oh, that was just a reaction to Scott Morrison. That's an outlier. But the recent council election kind of shows that trend is holding. But the other interesting thing, at least up here in Brisbane, is that really a lot of the vote has been coming off the Labor Party in the last couple of elections. And I guess I'm a little bit concerned or alert to the fact that we might have this narrative of, oh, support for the major parties is collapsing, but we're probably really seeing a hollowing out of centrism, and there's also a bit of a swing to the far right and to fascism. And so yeah, I guess we can't be too complacent about that. We actually have to be organising on the ground in communities to show people that they do that the alternatives they're craving can be progressive and egalitarian and utopian, and that they don't just have to vote for parties that want to lock up kids and strengthen borders and all that sort of stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, just a follow-up question that just sort of came to mind in your response, Jonathan, is I kind of want to hear, I guess, some of your comments a bit, I guess on the role of social movements, especially given that you as a Greens councillor have played a really good role in terms of building struggles of grassroots kind of struggles and campaigns. Because I guess one sort of observation, I guess, coming as well from a sort of socialist sort of perspective, is, I guess, one of the observable trends about Australian politics that make, and of course this trend is being observed across in Western Europe and within the UK as well. But one of the challenges that the left currently faces is we have the decline of the organised kind of working class, which has been the result of the impacts of kind of neoliberalism. And of course, for us in the left, one of the means by which we've attempted to rebuild kind of working class self-organisation has been through building grassroots sort of movements around different kind of struggles. So I guess I want to kind of hear, especially drawing on some of your experiences, some of your comments on how those things can link with this, with building support for left-wing ideas.
Yeah, as you said, I've been really actively involved in a lot of different grassroots struggles, actively supporting civil disobedience. And for a lot of people in the Greens, that was when I first got elected in 2016. That was a little bit unusual because there was sort of this assumption that Greens politicians turn up to speak at the rally or to support the protest, but they don't necessarily help organise it, whereas up in Brisbane, a lot of times it's the Greens co-organising and putting resources towards different forms of civil disobedience campaigns. And I think that's really, really important, not just to keep Greens elected representatives accountable and ensure that they're closely connected to broader movements for social change, but it's also important because if we're going to be running for elected office, we need to be signalling to the broader public the change doesn't come through the ballot box alone, but it's important to have elected reps who are on side, but it's equally important to continue to grow those social movements. And, I think you're dead on that we need to be building those intersectional alliances between different demographics and between different struggles. I do think there's sometimes a risk of valorising institutional union-based organising. Like, I'm obviously a big fan of unionism, and I think people should join their union, but we also need to recognise that historically in Australia, larger unions have sometimes played a de-escalatory or, dare I say, counter-revolutionary role in social movements where you've got workers on the ground who are actively organising for deep change, and then you've got unions doing deals with bosses or de-escalating strike action. So we have to also be aware of co-optation in all its forms, whether that's from political parties or from certain unions or from academic institutions. Like, the co-opting forces that have corrupted the Labor Party also apply to NGOs and unions and all sorts of other organisations that we organise with and we rely on. But the other thing I just wanted to say really quickly was that the other lesson coming out of the rise of the Greens, particularly in Brisbane, is that it's not just that the vote has grown, but it's grown while running on a really radical, almost explicitly anti-capitalist platform. Like in this council election, where we got this big 5% swing in an electorate of 850,000 voters, we put freezing rent increases right at the top of the flyer. We talked about shutting down an inner-city horse racing track and turning it into public housing. We were talking about Brisbane City Council should actively endorse and support the boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign regarding the genocide in Palestine. So these were sort of big, what some people might call radical ideas. And we campaigned on that really bold platform and we won votes as a result. So I think it's also an important reminder that we don't need to water down our message too much. We shouldn't fall into this trap of saying, oh, if our policy platform is too ambitious, that'll turn voters away, because we've just run on what's probably one of the most ambitious, anti-capitalist, transformative political platforms in modern Australian history, and there's been a huge swing towards the Greens, and so we need to take that lesson as well.
Jono, we'd like to hear some of your comments on Labor's current record in government, like their response to the cost of living crisis, their support for the genocide in Gaza, and also failures to address the climate crisis.
Yeah, like, obviously all this stuff is really disappointing, right? Like, it is outrageous that the Labor Party is still supporting new fossil fuel projects and isn't serious about a just transition away from coal extraction. It's, you know, reprehensible and morally bankrupt that they're still supporting the export of weapons components to Israel and to companies that are essentially manufacturing weapons for the Israeli genocide to continue. Even on housing, right? And what, you know, that's one of the central issues in terms of the cost of living. It's pretty obvious that the Labor Party doesn't actually want house prices and rent to fall. They're saying all the right things about wanting to support affordable housing, but they don't actually want house prices to get cheaper. And I think we don't have time on a short radio interview, but we need to be theorizing why it is that the Labor Party has been so heavily co-opted. Partly it's because they take donations from big companies. Partly it's because those corporations discipline them with the threat of capital strikes, where companies say, if you don't introduce regulations and policies that suit our interests, we're going to take all our money out of the country and suddenly make a bunch of workers jobless. It's partly because of this revolving door between Labor politicians and lobbyists and big business. And it's partly just because of the centralization of power itself. So there are all these different factors that are contributing to why Labor has become a right-wing party, which increasingly is shifting further and further towards the extreme right. And, yeah, I think we need to start by recognizing that this sort of thing can happen to any political party if we don't have really robust processes in place to guard against corruption and centralization of power.
Well, I wanted to follow up actually with just one question before we move into the last two. Because I guess one dynamic, and I think there's, I want to kind of hear your comments on this dynamic, because I'm going to sort of cover it with some other guests later on, is one dynamic with, I guess, the major parties, well, at least the Labor government while it's in power, and it's quite obvious, you know, I mean, this is quite evident in the context of the Queensland election and the Queensland, like the role of the state government in Labor, where they've essentially conceded to this right-wing kind of law and order agenda. And this is the direct result of pressure from the Liberal Party. And then, of course, you also have, on the federal stage, you have this whole pushing of this refugee, of this migration bill. And it's all in the context of folding into sort of pressure from the Liberal Party. And, of course, the argument that you hear from Labor apologists is the Labor Party have no choice but to implement this legislation because, you know, because basically it's about maintaining power at any cost, because essentially the argument is if we don't implement these right-wing policies, then we run the risk of losing our base of support amongst Liberal voters, and thus we'll get voted out. And I guess I want to kind of hear your thoughts on that sort of dynamic that's clearly quite evident in politics and really pushing politics further and further to the right.
Yeah, it's terrifying, isn't it? And it's a stupid conclusion for the Labor Party to draw, because if all they're doing is continually adopting Liberal Party policies in order to avoid losing votes to Liberals, then they're not actually changing society or improving people's lives. They're just becoming the Liberal Party. And I think, as you guys alluded to, we can all see that Labor is now really very much a right-wing political party disguised as a progressive party. What's also funny, though, is that when they're in opposition, sometimes they'll say more progressive things and they'll look like a left-wing political party in opposition, and then once they take government, they start to show their true colours. And the underlying problem here, which I think, again, can apply to all political parties if we're not careful, is that once you're, if you're a politician and you think you're in office because you're there to serve the public interest and you're doing a good thing, there's a bit of intellectual slippage where you start to say, well, I'm serving the public interest by being here. Therefore, it's in the public interest that I remain in power. Therefore, it's in the public interest that I do everything I can to remain in power. Therefore, it's in the public interest for me to do things that are contrary to human rights in order to maintain power. So it's a really slippery logical slope, I guess. And what we need to continually remind elected representatives and anyone who's organized in political spaces is that we have to do the work of transforming values and actually organizing out there in community. Because honestly, part of the reason that Labor is shifting to the right in terms of refugee policy and locking up kids and harsh on crime stuff is that they do think that there are votes to be won there. And whether that's true or not, they're kind of reinforcing those cycles, right? They're sort of creating a paradigm where they're saying that tough on crime works and they're going to be tougher on crime than the Liberals are. So they're playing into that. But those of us who want to see a different way forward actually have to do that work of shifting values so that there are more votes to be won by freezing rent increases and there are more votes to be won by increasing welfare support for people on low incomes and actually doing that work of building public support for a different vision for society, because the Labor Party is clearly not going to lead that change. We need to lead that on the ground in communities.
Yeah, I want to go into, I guess, the final kind of question that I'll combine the two last sort of questions, which is I want to kind of hear some of your kind of final comments. But I guess in the context of concluding on some of your, I guess, assessment on the growth of the Greens, your party, nationwide, and I guess what and the potential they have in becoming a serious kind of left-wing force in this country. Because I think, you know, I think there is, you know, from the Green slide in Queensland, there is this latent potential that the growth of the Greens could have the potential to change politics in Australia forever, which is actually quite, would be a very positive outcome, especially we're talking about the dominance of these major parties and how politics is just moving further and further right. The fact that there might be another political force that could emerge to actually push politics just open up the political debate of actually what's possible, because I think, you know, one of the challenges that we have to, that I'm sure the Greens have to face and we also have to face as socialists is the kind of apathy of ordinary everyday people, which is actually kind of, you know, it's kind of a bit of a common thing, I think, in the Australian context. And I think it's an understandable apathy, but it also probably also comes from the place of the fact that we're also quite a privileged global North country as well.
Yeah, and I guess like part of the success for the Greens where we have seen big growth in our votes in recent years is that we're reminding people that they can and should dream bigger and demand more. Often the policy platforms that we're taking to the election in recent years have been really bold, whether that's at the local or the state or the federal level, and they're not just talking about protecting trees from tree clearing. We're talking about taxing big corporations and redistributing that wealth to people who really need support, while also introducing some pretty big changes in terms of environmental protection, and social justice, etc. But I think it's what's really important to me is that, like, I think the Greens are already a serious alternative left-wing political force, and we are going to see that continue to grow, I reckon. But what's going to be crucial is whether the Greens evolve as a reformist party or as a transformational party, because we do already see examples where Greens are holding a bit of power at local government, or indeed in the Australian Capital Territory, the Greens are in coalition with a fairly progressive Labor Party government, and where the Greens hold power and win more seats, they are able to push the major parties and the political establishment back further towards the left. But we also need to ensure that all the rest of us are paying attention to what those elected Greens representatives are doing, and ensure that as we win more seats and the Greens win more votes, we're making sure that the co-opted forces that have destroyed and corrupted the Labor Party don't have the same impact on the Greens over time. So we need to be, I guess, getting more actively involved, I would say, in some of the party structures of the Greens, going along to branch meetings and state councils and all those decision-making spaces where the Greens decide what are the policy platforms going to be, which elected representatives they're going to put forward for election, all that sort of stuff, to ensure that the Greens stay true to their roots. And that, I think, the biggest challenge as the party wins more seats is ensuring that the party doesn't just default into incremental reformism, into making minor tweaks to the system and voting for small changes here and there without really transforming the whole thing. Because the reality is that we need big changes in society right now, whether it's on climate justice or housing policy or broader economic injustices. Like, we need some really big shifts in policy at all levels of government. And we don't have time to muck around with minor tweaks around the edges. So as the Greens do win more seats and more votes across the country, all the rest of us who aren't elected Greens representatives, whether we're members of the party or just volunteers or just supporters, we need to be putting pressure on those elected representatives to ensure that they don't capitulate to neoliberalism and aren't co-opted by the corrupting forces of hierarchical, centralised, top-down government.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jonathan. I think this has been a very good interview and discussion. And yeah, just for our listeners, we're going to be covering some of these themes that we've spoken to Jonathan about with other guests in future kind of programs, because I think this is very much the kind of decline of support for Labor and the role of the major parties. I think is very much the kind of hot topic that I think left-wing activists and a program like Green Left Radio needs to kind of be a platform for these kind of discussions. But yeah, thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thanks. Good on you guys for having these conversations.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.